Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to the Red Seat Podcast.
Back to full. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Part of the Over the Monster Network.
Swinging a high knee drive to right field. That one stalled to the right. Hunter on the move. Racing back. It's over his head. It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
Presented by SB Nation.
It hasn't happened at Fenway Park for 95 years. The Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
Here comes a 1-2 pitch. Red Sox win the World Series.
And featuring Keaton DeRocher.
Strikeouts in 2017 for Chris Sale. An absolute strikeout machine. 13 tonight against the Baltimore Orioles.
They're all loaded. High fly ball deep into left center field.
Get out.
Way back it carries. And that ball is gone. The Red Sox walk it off in style.
That's how it's done.
The X-Man strikes.
Fly ball to deep left center field. Devers has hit it out. The rookie takes Chapman the other way to tie the game.
Welcome back to the Over the Monster podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by my co-host, Keaton DeRocher of Over the Monster and of the Dynasty Guru. We are back for the first time in a couple weeks, and the Red Sox have some news. Red Sox have hired a brand new chief baseball officer, and we're going to talk about that on the show today, our initial reactions to that. And also, this is the first time that I've been on a podcast in a little while, so that's kind of cool. Keaton, how are you, my friend?
I'm okay in the midst of struggling with a cold, but I'll power through it, ready to talk some socks, get that off-season going.
All right, so we do finally have some news after what was well over a month of a vacancy here for the Red Sox in the vacated position by Dave Dombrowski. But the guy who ended up being hired by the Red Sox was Chaim Bloom of the Tampa Bay Rays. You know, he was working with the Rays since 2005. Extremely well thought of. Just a guy that, you know, when his name was brought up, everybody kind of acknowledged that this would be a great candidate for the job. But someone who, I don't know, it seemed like it was a little bit unrealistic that they were going to get somebody in this vein. The longer this search kind of went on, my impression of it was that the Red Sox were going to go with one of their internal options of Eddie Romero, Zach Scott, Brian O'Halloran, or Raquel Ferreira. Even though the management had said that they were looking outside, it just seemed like the job had a lot of question marks, and they'd already made a lot of moves, and it seemed like, you know, a guy like Bloom seemingly could have his pick of very many jobs. So I guess I was delightfully surprised by the fact that he chose the Red Sox.
Yeah, I was too, actually, but pleasantly surprised. By all accounts, this was a great hire for the Sox, and kind of looking forward to see the direction that he starts moving the team, which it shouldn't take long for things to start kind of falling in place here.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about your initial reactions to this. So obviously you were surprised, you liked the move, but like, what made you view this positively, I guess? What did you like about this move?
Yeah, well, I like that kind of moving more towards a progressive baseball front office, which I think is the way to go. And they kind of started doing that even before the hire a bit. There was some talk about how they were recommitting themselves to analytics, something they'd gotten away from under Dombrowski. And it's just so incredibly obvious that the teams that invest in analytics and like in an actual analytics department were the teams that performed the best, not only in player development, but on the actual field of play this year as well. So that was something that they really shouldn't have started to veer away from in the first place, but they wanted to make a commitment to get back to that, which is a positive sign. And I think that's kind of solidified here with this hire, that they're making a concerted effort to be more analytical and be more of a progressive baseball front office than they have been in the recent past, which I like.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's no better organization if the Red Sox are looking to be more efficient with finances and be better developmentally. I think there's really no better organization to look to than the Tampa Bay Rays. And, you know, over his time with the Rays, Bloom held a number of roles, assistant director of minor league operations in 2008. He started with them in 2005. In 2014, he became the vice president to baseball operations. And then as recently as 2016, he was second in command behind president of baseball operations, Matthew Silverman, as senior vice president of baseball operations. So he's really had his hand in a tremendous amount of what the Rays have been able to accomplish since 2005. And, you know, he has been able to learn right alongside Andrew Friedman, who was there from 2003 to 2014. So, I mean, he's been able to learn under some pretty talented guys as well.
Yeah, he has. You're absolutely right. For as much as we seem to dislike the Rays, they are one of the few model front offices out there currently. So being able to pick from their crop, smart move. And that, I think that was part of the surprise for me, that someone would leave the Rays for the Red Sox. But it's one of those, the situation that the Red Sox are in right now is really atypical for anybody who would be accepting a new job, that it's kind of like as much as this past season sucked, the future is bright. And it's, you know, it's a big market team. They're in a position to compete now and have a young core. And it's really isn't every day that you can jump into a situation like that.
You know, I've been of two minds talking about this situation and this vacancy. And, you know, I talked to Matt about it the most as we were on Locked On Red Sox together this year. And, man, the more I talked to Matt, I think he was able to convince me that this, in many ways, was an undesirable job. And I think even in our discussions, Keaton, there were a lot of things that you pointed out about management that made me think, like, ugh, you know, I don't know if an attractive candidate would take this position based on, you know, some of the things you've said about management and, you know, some of the just the red flags that are there. But at the end of the day, like, I kept going back to this idea that this is the Red Sox. You know, this is one of the five most important baseball franchises in the major leagues. There's only 30 of these jobs, right? So, like, you know, if you have an opportunity to have one of these jobs, especially for the Red Sox, it doesn't matter how much crap comes along with it. Like, it's still basically the best of the best. And so I was weighing that in my head, and I guess that won over, right? Because, I mean, this is an A-plus candidate. There aren't too many candidates out there who would have been a better fit for this job or a more high-profile fit for this job, right?
Yep, I agree. And you're right. I mean, my biggest concern is with the management and how they'll end up kind of hovering over people in the baseball ops and GM position. But that's been a concern going back, you know, over a decade now at this point. So it's not something that probably is going to go away. So you kind of have to pick and choose whether or not it's, you know, a place that you would want to work. And I think the other pieces of the job are a lot more attractive, and it being a big market team, them having Bogaerts and Devers locked up for the long term. They have a young core. They have a couple names in the farm. I mean, it's not like overwhelming, but it's in a bit of a better shape than it was really like a year ago. So it's, you know, trending up. And it's a team with a young core that is ready to compete now and has veteran pieces, at least for the moment, still with the team. So, I mean, if you look at the other jobs that are open, like Kansas City, they're not really trending. Well, I guess they're kind of trending up, but they're rock bottom trending up, where the Red Sox are in a position to compete now and trending up.
You don't think Pittsburgh's an attractive job?
That was the other one I was trying to think of. No, I do not think that's an attractive job at all. And they seem to just keep stepping on their tail. That's not great. So I think, I mean, if Bloom felt like right now was the time to make a move, it's not like a situation like this would have come up again in the near future. So I think that piece probably outweighed the ending up having to deal with the Red Sox front office. And hey, Theo Epstein was able to do it and leave the Red Sox and be successful. The two that have followed him, not so much. But there at least is a roadmap for an A-plus candidate like Bloom to be successful for however long he ends up being here and being successful for a long time after that. So that's probably, I guess, would be my guess as to what went into his thought process. But, I mean, it's not like ownership was going to just all of a sudden disappear. So that was just always going to be there.
Right. Yeah, ownership is ownership, and it's not necessarily a bad group. It's just a group that you have to manage, right? You have to be confident enough in what you do and have enough, goodwill is the way to put it. Like, if you're always doing things in a way that pleases ownership, in a way that is breeding success, I think you're going to be fine. I think the things that have happened negatively were when teams had struggles or collapses, and sure, those things will happen. But I think that the mindset that Bloom has from the people that he learned under, and just innately, it seems like the way that he thinks about the game, is always to have one eye on the future. And that's one of the things that he talked about in a few of the statements that have been made by him over the years. And I think the thing I'm most excited about here is just what's going to happen to Red Sox player development, and specifically in the area of how the Red Sox develop pitching. I think the Red Sox have been doing a much better job in the last few years under Dombrowski, getting away from this idea of that the Red Sox had to draft and develop pitchers with a certain body type and a certain arm slot and a certain height and, you know, all these different things that the Red Sox seem to require over time. And they've gotten away from that just to people that create a lot of deception and, you know, have success. And I think that's been good for the team. But having a guy like Bloom, who has just had tremendous success developing pitching, and I'm looking at a quote right here from Tom Verducci that said, "No franchise understands better how to identify, develop, and maintain quality pitchers." That was from 2008, I believe. And then in Jen McCaffrey's Five Things to Know About Bloom article, she talked about development of Price, Blake Snell, Matt Moore, Alex Cobb, and many more. I mean, the Rays just always seem to put out pitcher after pitcher after pitcher. So if there's something to get excited about, I think it's what's going to happen to the minor leagues for the Red Sox.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And hopefully, with the decisions looming, it won't take long for him to start putting his kind of stamp on the organization. And I really hope that means retaining Mookie Betts forever.
Yeah, so I guess that's the next logical spot for us to go to. Bloom's going to have his hands full with decisions basically right away. The biggest shoe that has to drop, though, before anything can really be considered, before Bloom knows what he has to work with, is the J.D. Martinez decision, whether or not he's going to opt out. And I know you had some thoughts on that situation, so let's start there.
Yeah, I just kind of found it weird that nobody had talked to him yet. You know, even with the vacancies within the organization, it still seemed like someone should reach out to him, like even maybe Cora. Like, I don't know if they wanted someone that close to him kind of reaching out to him about his where his head was at or not. But the only thing that's happened is Tom Werner is met with Scott Boras, and it seemed like, I don't even know what kind of meeting it was. It was just nothing's changed. And Red Sox haven't made an attempt to restructure or actually reach out to Martinez himself. So they're just sitting back on their hands waiting for some kind of decision to come. And it doesn't seem like the only thing that came out of the meeting is just that Henry or Tom Werner acknowledged that he met with Boras and that nothing's changed, which makes me wonder what the conversation was even about. Was it just like a, hey, are you're out, you're in? And they're like, nope. Okay, cool. And then that just kind of continued. So I think that's got to be the first step, right? Because Martinez is obviously going to be the first shoe to drop on what would or would not happen with Betts. So I would expect maybe by the end of the week we'll have heard something that Bloom has met with Martinez or talked to his folks or him, hopefully him directly. But the other quote was from Henry, who said, "I don't know what they're thinking in regards to Martinez and Boras." So it seemed like whatever meeting they had or was not all that effective. So that doesn't give me hope that, well, I think that the Red Sox would be the most logical place for him to land or stay with, like opt in for him to play next season. I'm kind of losing hope that that is actually going to be the reality with Martinez.
Yeah, I guess I take this inaction by the Red Sox as lack of interest. I think if you are very interested in re-signing a guy, you're reaching out to him immediately, and if you're interested in keeping him, you're trying to restructure his money or, you know, do something with the contract that makes it more tenable for the Red Sox situation. And I think that by standing back the way they are, they're making a clear signal that, like, hey, listen, we really need your money to pay Betts, so, like, can you just, like, kind of opt out? Like, that's the way that I'm taking this whole thing.
Yeah, me too. That's exactly how I'm taking it, too. And I really don't think that's an appropriate way to treat him.
I agree. I would hope, and I don't know this to be true, if, you know, we could just be, this is complete conjecture. So maybe this is exactly what the meeting was, but I would hope that the meeting would go something like, hey, we really appreciate everything that you've meant to this club and, you know, to the World Series and all that stuff. But like, the reality is that we've put ourselves in a position where we need to choose between you and Betts right now. And, you know, that's what it is. So thank you so much. And we wish you the best, you know, and I think that that's like, that's what I would like them to say, because yes, you have completely boned this financial position to the point where that is what you need to say to him.
Yep. And not real big fan. So, I mean, hopefully now that the positions of baseball ops and GM have been filled, that he has like direct contacts on who to talk to and whatnot. So hopefully that can begin, because I feel like ownership, it was probably on purpose, their lack of involvement, kind of like you said, and hoping that he might take a hint of, we'd rather have Betts than you long term, so go away, kind of thing. But that's it just kind of adds to the frustrations of the front office and how they handle things and how they end up, you know, eventually breaking up with personnel and players, and that it's rarely good.
Well, maybe they'll get better at it this time. There's always hope.
That's true. There is always hope.
But I think you mentioned something that I want to hit on next. What's going to be happening with the rest of the structure here? So Brian O'Halloran, who was one of the four guys sort of co-running this team before they hired Bloom, has been hired as the general manager. Raquel Ferreira is going to be sticking with the Red Sox, and she is going to retain her title of Senior VP, Major League and Minor League Operations. And Eddie Romero and Zach Scott, as of right now, are maintaining their assistant general manager titles. But rumor has it that one of those guys was interviewing for a job today. So I wouldn't expect all of them to stay in the organization, but during the press conference with Bloom today, you know, basically every quote that we saw from Alex Speer, who was kind of tweeting out things from here, was about collaboration. And it says, he prioritizes people and relationships above all else. This is Sam Kennedy talking about him. There was consistent refrain about Bloom's creativity, humility, intelligence, and sense of humor. Let's see. I don't know. Basically, everything saying he loves to collaborate with people, and Bloom himself saying that this is going to be, you know, something where it's not just him being an authoritarian figure at the top, them kind of taking input from everybody else. And yeah, it says, soliciting lots of input, Bloom was identified as top candidate, blah, blah, blah. You know, all this good mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, which just seems like a big difference from the Dombrowski era, where kind of everything ran through Dombrowski. But that is kind of more of like that old school baseball mentality, so I guess it's not all that surprising. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, it's just, when you're trying to overhaul the culture of an entire management group in front office, the way that Bloom's going about it seems like a much more successful plan than what happened with Dombrowski. And I guess eventually by the end it just turned into a split front office where what were the reports that Dombrowski was basically, it was just him off by himself with La Russa by the end of it. That's not a great way to go.
No, it's in by all accounts, you know, the rest of baseball ops was sort of miserable working with him by that point. And
yeah,
I think this approach is way more reminiscent of the Theo days too. And it says right here that Henry says Bloom's appeal was the collaborative approach rather than an autocratic one. When you look back at those Theo days, I mean, how many high up baseball ops guys did that whole era create from that Theo sort of general manager tree? I mean, there's probably 13 or 14 guys around baseball at least who are either assistant GMs or higher who had some tie to the Theo days.
Yeah, and I think probably most notable would be Mike Hazen, right, who there's a lot of folks who are hoping we're going to get this job.
Right, yeah, you've got Hazen, you've got Hoyer, you've got Emil Sade, you've got, like, all these people all across baseball who have just been, you know, part of that and in so many different roles. So I think this is probably going to be an overwhelmingly positive thing. But aside from that, I mean, he's going to deal with the Martinez and Betts issues. Those are the two big things. The Red Sox have made a couple small decisions that we should probably hit on real quick. Chris Owings was outrighted to the minors. He becomes a free agent. Josh Smith was outrighted to the minors. Gorkys Hernandez was outrighted. Stephen Wright was released. So the Red Sox have a whole bunch of free agents. We've talked about some of these guys before, but Porcello, Holt, Moreland, Thornburg, Chacin, Wright, Owings, Pearson, Nunez are sort of the big names there.
Yep, I don't think you and I thought any of those folks would really be back. Well, I guess you thought Gorkys Hernandez for a bit.
And then I switched.
Yeah. So.
Yes, glad I did.
Yeah, nothing major yet, nothing really surprising yet either, which I guess is good news. And maybe we can save our tears for another day.
Yeah, and it's worth noting they have 6 open spots on the 40-man roster right now. And, you know, a bunch of guys that we assume that they'll add. But we won't get too deep into the weeds of the 40-man. That's certainly for another day.
Well, that's coming up. They only have, like, a month, right? Isn't it, like, the first week of December?
They do. But, yeah, I mean, I guess we could do that real quick if you want to.
No.
Hit on some guys?
I think on our next one we should, because okay. I haven't. I mean, besides, I think we've mentioned Dalbec
Brian Dalbec's coming back?
Yeah. Dalbec and, who is it, Hauk, as the two obvious ones that would need to be added.
CJ Chatham probably as well.
Yeah, so I haven't really gone much further beyond those guys. So if we let's have a little bit of prep time and hit that on the next one. But it is the that protection deadline is rapidly approaching.
We should also just hit on this quickly, and this is still developing, so we don't have a tremendous amount of information about this. But Alex Spear was reporting just an hour ago, as we're recording this, that Dave Bush, the Red Sox minor league pitching coordinator of performance this year, is the clear front runner to be named Red Sox pitching coach. And one of the other guys who was being talked about as sort of a front runner for this was somebody that one of our listeners mentioned, Kason Sirois, who asked us, one, thoughts on Bloom, and two, who do you think the pitching coach will be? Brian Price of the Reds, who was definitely a big candidate there. But it does look like this is going to come from an internal candidate.
Yeah. I kind of like that. It'd be interesting to see how that, I mean, I guess, kind of finally shakes out. But I think for that particular position, I like going inside rather than outside. I don't know what your thoughts on that are. I don't think we've actually talked about pitching coach on this podcast.
Pitching coach is one that's been tough for me to talk about because I feel like there are endless candidates.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like there's just one. I like the idea of Mickey Callaway, but also he could have been pretty burnt out from, you know, just being in New York as manager. I do like what Brian Price has done with the Reds, so I thought that was a good candidate, but really...
he did an incredible job with the Reds.
He really did.
I mean,
did
really good coming job. Into the season, I had that as... I mean, we talked about that pitching staff on Dynasty's Child in the beginning of the season, and I wanted absolutely nothing to do with it. I thought from top to bottom, it was absolute trash. And it ended up being a top 5 pitching rotation in the major leagues. It's kind of just stupid, the things he was able to do with that rotation this year.
Yeah, one of us geniuses even predicted him to be a playoff team.
That's right, you did.
Yeah, I guess even his pitching genius couldn't get him there. But, yeah, no, he's done a tremendous job. But I guess I just don't have that many thoughts on this candidacy. I've been so focused on who was going to be the, you know, the person in charge of baseball ops that I haven't really put too much thought into pitching coach. And You know, I felt like it was kind of pissing in the wind trying to guess who's going to be the one who's going to make it out of this whole smattering of people who could take this job and probably do a good job with it. I didn't even think that, what's his name? The former pitching coach who I'm blanking on right now. Lavangie, yes, Lavangie. I mean, I kind of wanted him back for a year. I get why they moved on, but, you know, I didn't have any huge issues with him. Obviously, the pitching was great in 2018 and then really bad in 2019, so I don't know. I kind of thought that he deserved one more year, but I totally get why they want to move in a different direction, especially as reports came out that he just wasn't as open to analytics as I think the Red Sox want him to be, and I think that clearly we're seeing the team shift in a more analytic direction.
Does that make you more frustrated how they handled Dombrowski then? Because they weren't hesitant to part with Lavangie, who they didn't think was a right fit for what they wanted to do, but they did let Dombrowski go a year longer. I mean, we talked about it last time that just the optics of firing your GM after winning a World Series are not great. But at the same time, if you want to take the team in a completely opposite direction, you kind of just don't let them torpedo your vision.
Right.
And so it didn't seem like they had a problem cutting ties with Lavangie, and maybe they had learned from how they handled Dombrowski and they didn't want to see that happen again. But does that make you more frustrated for how they handled Dombrowski?
Yeah, in a way. In a way it does, yeah. I guess, I don't know, maybe part of me thinks with this Dombrowski thing that their best case scenario was even a little bit different than what happened. I think we all admit that Dave Dombrowski came in and did his job and won the World Series and did exactly what he was supposed to do. But I do think that when he was brought in that there was more of a show made about how Dave Dombrowski was leaving the whole baseball ops department alone and that he was going to work more collaboratively with them and it wouldn't just be like this old school approach. But I think we found out pretty quickly that within about a year after that honeymoon period that it shifted to being strictly the Dombrowski show and the analytics were going to be second tier.
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel that way about the whole situation, or do you think that, you know, they were able to maintain more of a balance?
I do not think that they were. Just particularly, I guess, by the end of it, there have been so many cracks that it's kind of hard to kind of tie it all together. But it definitely feels like that. Like, it just wasn't able to... There was just too much of a chasm between the two. His Dombrowski's rule of law and just the analytics piece. And it's shocking, right? So I don't know if you've read... The MVP Machine.
I have not.
I have. It is next up on my reading list, and I've seen some excerpts from it. But it's kind of just shocking, like how far ahead of all these other teams the Astros are, and they're not even doing anything that's that wild. They're just having pitchers throw their best stuff more often, and basically stop throwing sinkers. And it's incredible it's incredible that nobody else has figured that out.
Yeah.
And if you're kind of resistant to that information and you're trying to, you know, help guys develop based off of, well, it's, you know, it's fastball, fastball, curveball. That's kind of how you get a guy out. But if neither of those pitches are your best pitcher, or neither of those pitches are your best pitch, then why would you throw them? Kind of deal. It's obviously harder than it sounds, but when it's boiled down to just kind of those headlines of throw your best stuff and don't throw sinkers, and you see the Astros having this kind of success that they're having, it's just baffling that nobody else is picking up on it. And that understanding of analytics and what these, you know, what spin rate means to pitches, and just being able to develop your own players. I mean, if they're not willing to really kind of see that as the way that baseball is going in the future of baseball, then Yeah, I'm not surprised that there's a gap and there started to be kind of those canyons between the analytics folks and the this is how we've always done it folks.
Yeah, and you know, we have seen that gap be bigger and smaller at different times over the last 20 years, and I do think that you're right that this is probably one of those times where that gap's gotten a little bit wider in the last few years than it had been maybe over the last 10 before it.
And you remember, like, in the beginning of Theo's reign, the Red Sox were one of the more analytical teams in baseball. And it's completely shifted to the point now where they're actually one of the least analytical teams in baseball. And the frustrations on the field kind of show that. So yeah. I'm looking forward to... I keep dropping this stupid fucking Allen wrench that I've been playing with. So I'm going to stop playing with it. It's been incredibly frustrating just to see that play out on the field. So I would like the Red Sox to get back to being one of the trendsetters in the league and not fall so far behind. Because it's kind of like the Red Sox, like you said, that like this is one of the premier franchises in the league. It should not be one of those teams that's falling behind. And they are.
Yeah, I agree. And especially when their competition in the Yankees and the Twins and the Astros are able to keep up in that department, if not make advances in that department, while investing significant capital. And I think that that's exactly what Bloom gives them the chance to do here.
Yep, I agree.
Let's get to some listener questions. We got a few. The first one we have is from our friend Shelley Verstrate, and she says, thoughts on Tyler Clippard and Will Harris as bullpen additions this offseason? They're both a bit on the older side, but have performed well. I've been really clamoring for Will Harris. He's been guy for a while now. So I love the idea of Will Harris. He is 35 years old. He will be pitching in his age 35 season next year. And he's been great for the Astros for the last really 5 years that he's been there. I don't know if he would want to move or if the Astros would let him move, but I mean, I love the idea of adding a righty like that. He's just proven again in the postseason he can get guys out in huge spots and so reliable. I'm less excited about Clippard, though, whose underlying numbers have not been that good despite his success.
I was going to say, he actually had a pretty darn good year this year, which was really the first time since 2014, his last year with the Nationals, that he's put up numbers like this.
That BABIP, though, 204. I don't know.
That is pretty low.
It's pretty low. And his 82% strand rate, I mean, I guess he's done strand rates close to that before in the past, but I guess I have such bad memories of Clippard from the Nationals where he just fell apart in huge situations that I just do not want anything to do with him, but he did have a good year with the Indians. What do you think about Clippard?
I mean, he'd be an upgrade over about half the bullpen that they have now.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue against that.
So, I mean, if you're not using him as a closer, sure, I'm all for it. Because I think, I mean, you want Will Harris as a closer. And probably the reality is we go into the season with Brandon Workman as a closer, who I would want him to be to close, like, over Clippard. And so if you're using Clippard as, like, the one of, the, like, the 7th, 8th inning guys to get you to Workman, yeah, I'm all for that. I'm fine with that.
I actually don't want Harris as the closer. I just want him to be the bridge. I think he's dangerous in that role. I like Workman in that role, honestly.
Oh, so in your roster projection where you had Harris, you still had Workman as a closer?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I just think Workman has the cojones for that role.
Totally. I mean, I think I'd probably agree with that for the most part. That's probably, though, where they'll save money. Is on bullpen. I guess I'm coming around to, I don't think they're going to make a major move for the bullpen because I think they feel comfortable with Workman. And you're kind of coming around or getting me to come around. I would like a Will Smith and then have Workman be the eighth inning guy. But I don't think that's a place that they can save like $10 to $15 million by not having one of those signings and rolling with you know, essentially the bullpen that they have now, with expecting some guys to take some steps forward, like Hernandez to not walk as many next year. Probably will still have walk issues because I think his walk for now is like 4. So, but it just going down in general would be a win for him. So I think they're banking on things like that.
I do really like where Shelley's head is at, though, with, you know, going after some of these guys who are in their mid to late 30s who are going to cost you less years and less money, similar to what the Washington Nationals did this year with, you know, Daniel Hudson and Sean Doolittle and, you know, Fernando Rodney and, you know, guys who are up there in age who are still effective. Do like that.
Yeah.
All right, next question from Zach. And he says, what is Bloom's first move?
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Boy. Well, I mean, I feel like it has to be JD related.
I would ask where the bathroom is, because you do not want to, like, not know where the bathroom is.
You don't think he has one of those fancy offices that has its own?
I mean, even if he does, he needs to know, like,
where the secret button in the bookcase is to open it.
Yeah, like all those different things. You don't want a secret bathroom that you have to share with guests, you know? You want it to be your own private sanctuary.
Maybe scooping up a nice lobster roll, some native food here with a side of clam chowder.
Oh, not in the bathroom, though.
Not in the bathroom? No?
No. Not eating a lobster roll in the bathroom, no matter how nice it is.
Why not? You're just cutting out the middle, man. Just going straight to the end. Yeah, I feel like it's got to be making some kind of contact with JD. Maybe it's not getting something settled, like a restructured deal, or getting an answer from him on In-N-Out, but some kind of conversation that can shape how the rest of the offseason can go. I feel like that's probably the first move.
Just call him and insult him. Yo, JD, this is Bloom, you bitch. Don't opt in. Yeah, that would probably get him to opt out, so... Or maybe,
probably would.
Maybe he'd just do the opposite and be a thorn in Bloom's side for his entire tenure here.
Threaten to trade him to San Francisco.
I think JD's power would play in San Fran. I do.
His power and hit tool will play anywhere.
Yes, he is a monster.
I think he is one of the few righties that could probably poke one into McCovey Cove.
Harper did it.
He's a lefty.
Oh, yeah. He is a lefty. My B. Seth Moss has our next question. He says, when alternate realities cause holes in other dimensions, should we acquire Adrian Gonzalez?
Oh, God. No. I'm over him.
Do we get 2011 Adrian Gonzalez?
Even so. Man,
he was good.
He was, but I really just hated hearing him talk.
He was a very passive man.
Yeah.
I don't think that his passivity would really gel very well with this already passive group of people. I think the Red Sox could really use somebody with some fire in their belly, like a Johnny Gomes type. We need some of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, Mookie is just so calm and cool and collected and laid back, and so is Benintendi is, like, way too much that way. Benintendi is so much that way, it pisses me off. Like, it legitimately makes me angry.
Yeah, I mean, you and I were talking, I can't remember if it was before the last podcast or the one before, but I made the comp that Benintendi is the new JD Drew, and I feel like that's just dead on.
I totally agree. That made so much sense to me. I think the whole outfield's that way. They're just, like, they're way too cool for me. And Matt would hate this so much, but you know what? He's not here, so screw you, Matt.
Yeah, get your own podcast, Matt.
Yeah, but seriously, don't want Adrian Gonzalez. Dave Lantham has our last question, and he says, how long should we cry when they inevitably trade Mookie?
Boy. I mean, I don't know if my initial reaction will be to scream or to cry or to scry. I feel like there's just a lot of involuntary things that'll happen all at once. I'm not sure how to be able to control it. And probably if you do cry, I feel like all the way to spring training is very valid.
Will it be like a single tear, or will it be like ugly crying and snorting and, like, you know, like a real mess?
It'll be a mess.
I'm not going to cry if they trade Mookie. I'm just going to be furious.
Yeah.
I just get angry. I don't get sad. I get angry.
We're kind of already getting angry about it, and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, which is why we're not going to talk about the Mike Petriello article about six potential landing spots for Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
Even though we know it exists, people. We do know it exists.
Also, the fact that there's already teams coming out talking about how they plan to heavily pursue JD Martinez doesn't make me feel good. White Sox being one of them. And I can't remember now who the second team was.
We talked about that. Matt and I talked about that like 3 weeks before the end of the season, about how the White Sox would be a potential target. And I actually mentioned that on the radio spot in Portland, or no, what is it?
Bangor.
Yeah. So that's cool. It's cool that we
is it?
We got that.
Yeah, so it was within the last week, there's two teams that have come out and been like, we plan on going all in on Mr. JD Martinez. And the White Sox was one of them, and now I can't remember who the second team was. Oh, it was the goddamn Yankees.
The Yankees aren't going after JD. That's so
yeah, how much of that is just a smokescreen to fuck with the Red Sox? Probably more. But Chicago is legit.
Yeah, Chicago is very legit. But come on, Yankees. Like, get out of my face. You need pitching.
Yeah.
And also that stupid Giancarlo Stanton contract makes me so happy.
Well, I mean, as long as he keeps missing like 130 games a year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see that getting better with age. So.
No, I don't think so either.
Screw you, Pinstripes. You're out of the playoffs again. It's been a decade since you've won anything. Boom!
Yeah, who'd have thought that the only New York team to make it to the World Series this decade would be the Mets?
Not I.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. We did have one more question, which did involve the Mets, and I lost it.
I got it.
You got it?
Yeah.
It was something about Syndergaard and Robbie Cano for David Price and Mookie Betts, right?
Yep, that was exactly it.
But what was the money involved? It's like 30 and 30 going from the Red Sox. It's like 32 and 30 for 24 and 8. So the whole thing is like you're saving a bunch of money by doing it. But you're trading freaking Mookie Betts.
Yeah, you're making your team a lot worse. yeah. by doing that. So I would prefer to not.
Yeah, I don't like it. I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't like it at all. And I don't even like that we're thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, especially, like, you can't make a move like that until you know what's going on with JD. Because if JD opts in, then, well, I mean, I don't think you should make a move like that at all. But just in the terms of bets, and I know we said that we weren't going to talk about it. Now we kind of are talking about it. But if you trade bets before Martinez has made a decision and then he opts out and signs with the White Sox, like, what the hell did you just do to yourself?
Yeah, and also Cano has 4 more years left on that deal.
Yeah, I think at this point, David Price gets out of his deal before Cano does. So I'd prefer to keep David Price than have Robinson Cano.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of the biggest Cano fans probably that there is. And I can't not even defend that move in the slightest. Do love his swing, though. Oh, what a swing. All right. Well, I think that wraps our show. Do you have any closing thoughts before we get out of here, Keaton?
I don't, but perhaps since the World Series will be over by the time we record next, maybe we'll have some clarity on the goings-ons.
Yes, and hopefully the Washington Nationals will continue their trend of only winning games on the road and will win the World Series in 7 games.
Yeah, that would be great, because that was my prediction all the way back at the beginning of spring training when we did our 2019 outlook. I had Nationals over Houston.
I had Nationals over Red Sox.
Well, you can still get the most important part right.
Yes, but when I did my postseason bracket, I amended it to Houston over Nationals.
Well, what a cheater you are.
I know. I hate that the Astros are this good, but here we are.
Yep.
And here we go. Thank you for listening, and we'll be with you in a future podcast, probably in a couple weeks, but if something breaks before then, we'll be with you sooner. Bye now.